Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Pain don't hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Bargain Bin. He's your host, Ben Mason.
And he is your co-host, Sandro Lukavec. And today, we are talking 2007's Time Crimes.
Well, that was a really subdued way of saying my name. Jeez.
Well, I'm trying something different.
I don't like it. It's scary and different.
Sandro, Time Crimes is not a new movie for you.
No, it's not, actually. You didn't give your spoiler warning.
Oh, whatever. It's a Spanish film. People don't care.
I know, but like, it's your thing. You gotta say it. Like, do your thing.
I don't even know what I should say about this because I don't, I think I fully get everything. We're, I guess, spoiling part of the movie because I don't know if I fully understand it.
Okay, fine. I'll say it to people who don't know. Today we're doing 2007's Time Crimes. And we assume if you're listening to this, you've already seen the movie. Hopefully you have, because there's no way to talk about this movie without getting into spoilers. Because obviously a big part of watching it is figuring out what's going on. So if you are interested in this movie, please watch the movie and then come back and pick up where we are.
Highly recommended. I mean, it's a very interesting film, and we will spoil it probably, what, 5 minutes into the conversation?
It's inevitable.
Yeah. I would like to say, though, this is directed by Nacho Vigalondo. You might know his short films from A is for Apocalypse from the ABCs of Death, or Parallel Monsters from VHS Viral. He's also done some North American feature films like Open Windows with Elijah Wood and Sasha Gray, and Colossal. They definitely stray from what I like about his directing. To get a really good sense of what Nacho Vigalondo does, you have to watch his Spanish stuff. And it's all amazing.
Yeah, so none of those things that you said am I familiar with.
Of course not.
But I am familiar with this movie, and for anybody who's curious, this is the first time that we are covering a foreign movie. I watched this on Tubi, where it is available for anybody who's curious, with subtitles. I didn't watch a dubbed version, so my perspective might be a little bit different, because Ben, I believe you watched a dubbed version?
I have the DVD, and it automatically plays with English dialogue. So I did watch it for my first viewing with English, but I definitely prefer Spanish with English subtitles. That's how the movie should be viewed.
Okay. Curious if you got any sort of differences between the two just based on delivery.
It's pretty close. It just, I don't like the voice actors they chose for the, for the performers. It also kind of takes you out of the movie because the native language works really well with the writing. What you're hearing, you actually see the actors' mouths speaking. So it, you know, it's just much more natural. I've always loved subtitles over a dub because dubs always just feel slightly off.
Well, you know that means we have to record our own dub for this movie then. So it is not time to play our game, simply because this is a foreign movie. There are four actors in it, and I'm guessing like a body double for the main character.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing for us to play here. I'm sure you're heartbroken about it.
It really ruined my day.
All right. So that said, I guess there's nothing else to do but get into this movie.
No, before we do that, I would like to talk about your history with the film, because we touched on it at the end of our Bordello of Blood episode.
Okay.
How did you find out about this film?
Okay, well, we didn't hint at it at the end of Bordello. You just flat out said that it was part of what got me into podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that you and your friends back in the day did a podcast, Zombie Dolphins, that had an episode where you guys just talked about time-traveling movies kind of more generalized, but you hit on a few examples. And Time Crimes was one of the ones that you guys talked about a little bit more in depth in that episode. And I don't often do this, but after listening to you guys talk about this movie, I was like, I need to seek out this movie and watch it. Which, like I said, usually I hear people talk about a movie and then I forget about it, or I wait until somebody actually directly tells me to watch it. But I did it. And that also in turn made me think, well, they're having a lot of fun. Maybe I can start a website about video games, because that's what I like. And if they can do this, why can't I do what I like? And then, you know, did Pixel Opinions for 5 years or so. And it was the experience and knowledge I gained for editing, graphic design, and everything like that that gave me the confidence to approach you about doing this BS bargain bin. So in an indirect way, it all comes back to Time Crimes.
And I am Ben 3.
Ben 3?
Hector 3?
Yeah, but well, why would you be Ben 3?
I don't know. It's confusing. It's time travel.
Ah, in my books, you're number 1.
Oh.
All right, enough of this. Let's get into this movie, which, by the way, as soon as you pick this movie, I'm like, what is he doing to us?
Oh, I fucked up. there's no denying I messed up real bad by picking this movie. I just thought it would be fun to visit it with you.
Yeah, it's a foreign movie about time travel with a lot of thinking involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I acknowledge my mistake here.
I called you out on it like as soon as we got off recording last week, and you're like, I mean, yeah, I don't know what I was doing.
This is it's gonna be a short episode, folks.
Yeah, as you can tell from our current meandering.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to say. The awards, not a thing.
Yeah, for anybody who's wondering, as I mentioned, there's 4 actors, so picking favorite and least favorite performance is a little redundant. Watching subtitles takes away so much of the tone and emotion from the delivery that it's hard to pick a favorite, like, line. It's like, I'm not doing one award. So no game today, no awards. We're just going to talk about the movie in probably our shortest episode in history and then move on.
That being said, watch Time Crimes.
It is free on Tubi as of the time of this recording. So
just getting right into it. Sandro, we start off with a car leaving a mall and heading into rural Spain, which somehow is jarring. Like, this is a jarring film. The music, curious. The quick cuts, potentially unnecessary, but it does kind of set us up for the pacing of where we get around midway through the film.
I actually had to rewind it because my brain is so westernized to see if it was a Walmart.
Oh my God, really? Yeah. Wait, why would that even matter?
I don't know. Part of me, like, I don't know. I had a quick glance and then I'm like, was that Walmart? Did I? And then I rewound and I'm like, no, it literally does not have a sign out front. I'm just looking for Walmart.
Well, the quality of the table that comes from that store made me think IKEA, but not that either.
Well.
So everything falling out of the back of the car because the hatch was open? Why?
Are they trying to set up that Hector is not that bright or perceptive? Because how would you not notice that the hatch wasn't closed and that things are literally falling out of the back of your car?
But everything falls out as Hector is pulling up into the driveway. So did it just happen?
Must have. Nothing fell. The country roads are so flat and smooth that the hatch stayed closed.
And I have to ask you, why give us this comedy now and never truly revisit it throughout the film? It seems so out of place. I don't like it. It doesn't fit.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of the worst scenes in the movie.
Agreed.
It's so pointless. There's so much about this movie that is very deliberate. Whether you fully grasp it or get all of the ideas, it's well thought out and it's connected well, that it just stands out so much that you have this random nothing scene that is just ridiculous and doesn't fit the movie at all.
Agree. Yeah, like it sets up a tone that it never revisits, and I think Vigilando really dropped the ball with it, because I think he's an amazing director, an amazing writer. This does not fit whatsoever. But no. Regardless, we have Hector and Clara as our married couple in the movie. Hector goes upstairs to rest, or tries to rest.
He comes off as pretty rude to her.
Yeah, I think Hector's an asshole.
Yeah, I got that feeling too.
It never outright shows us that's how he is. But little bits and pieces like this, you can't identify with him. You don't feel for him. But this is our protagonist going through the film. Well, not protagonist. This is who we will follow throughout the film.
Yeah. He just needs to be nicer to his wife. Like,
yeah.
They talk about if the table is going to fit through the door. And he's just like, yeah, if it doesn't fit, I'm just going to throw it out or something like that. It's like, what? Like, why are you so mean to her?
Yeah.
Help her out.
He's so rude and abrupt. I also find it weird that he just has binoculars around.
I don't know. He seems kind of creepy to me. The binoculars did not seem off-putting at all.
Yeah, actually. But yeah, he decides to look into the nearby woods and like through his backyard with these binoculars.
Yeah, if these two weren't living in a secluded area, I would absolutely bet that he's rude to her because he has binoculars and he's spying on like the neighbor's wife or something.
Yeah.
That's the impression you get of this guy.
Exactly.
You're a protagonist, everyone.
It gets even worse because the phone rings and he just tells Clara about it. But she's outside. How's she going to answer the phone?
She's outside building the table he wouldn't help her with. And he's just like, go get the phone. I'm in the house, but you come in and get the phone.
And then the call itself is mysterious. Star 69, I guess, is what he does. Redirects to a restricted number. But we have no reason to believe that anybody knows what their number is or where they live. They are just moving into the house now.
Well, and they bring that up too.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, he tells Clara, like, when she asks who was on the phone, like, he says, like, well, who could it have been? Nobody knows our number and there was no one there type thing.
Right. Again, one of these little things in time travel movies that we do return to that seems like nothing at the moment.
It doesn't seem like nothing.
It does.
You got a mysterious phone call. It's not like there's no one there. It's like there's definitely some silence on the other end. It's creepy. And it comes from a facility. You're like, that is going to be something later on.
Yes. There's a lot that happens in this movie that you would easily ignore that gets referenced 2, 3, 4 times over. But Claire's building that furniture outside while Hector keeps staring through his binoculars. He's looking at absolutely nothing until he catches a glimpse of something. And what does he see?
A woman, kind of with her face covered by her hair because she's looking to the side, yes. Taking her top off.
Yep.
And now you know why he has the binoculars.
This man is prepared.
He's like, finally, they are going to pay off.
Bird watching. Clara says the table she built doesn't fit in the bedroom. I call bullshit.
That thing's tiny.
It's a tiny table. All you have to do is put it in on an angle.
It's a side table, at best.
Yeah. Yeah. So she has to go back to the store. The girl in the woods vanished, but our pervy protagonist keeps looking.
Well, yeah, he needs more.
Well, he even just goes wandering into the woods looking for her.
Well, what do you think his intention is?
I don't know, and I, I don't think I want to.
Yeah, because at this point, he doesn't know anything other than the fact that there was a woman in the forest taking her top off.
Yeah.
What is his intention by going into said woods?
I mean, come on now.
To tell her to cover it up? I don't think so.
He has creep written all over his face.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No. He sees a dumpster knocked over with a bicycle next to it, looks through the binoculars again, and sees the woman's clothing on the ground. Then, which I completely forgot about and completely caught me off guard, sees her unconscious body.
But now she's not topless.
She's fully naked.
Just fully naked.
So he falls and face plants. But,
such a dummy.
I know. This girl looks dead. But is she?
No.
Exactly. And
we don't know that right now, though.
Yes, we do. Do you know why? Because the actress is visibly breathing.
Oh, I didn't even pay that much attention to that.
Yeah. So I'm confused at this point. I don't remember this movie. It's been a long time since I saw it. I just know that I enjoyed it.
Well, I'm a gentleman, so I wasn't looking that closely.
I am not, and I will stare. Beautiful woman.
I'll add my own binoculars to the screen.
Yeah. No binoculars here, just a magnifying glass. So yeah, you do what you can. You just sounded so disgusted.
That's what I was going for.
Out of nowhere, Hector is stabbed in the arm with a pair of scissors. It's a good jump scare.
Yeah, I liked it.
What do you think about the assailant?
Well, at this point, so do I take the mentality of like as I was watching the movie or?
As you're watching the movie.
I was just intrigued at this point. I'm like, This is actually getting really good. Because even the way that they record it, you're like, you know that woman is not doing any of this on her own. And then this guy gets stabbed. It's like, okay, you're giving me pieces. They don't fit together yet, but I'm very curious.
But the guy who stabs him with the scissors is wearing a trench coat and has pink bandages wrapped around his head.
Yeah, it's like Darkman's twin brother.
Yeah. Pinkman.
I've never seen Darkman, but I know the image from like the posters.
Highly recommended. It's a great shot. A really good shot. But Hector flees and scales a fence, knocking himself out as he tumbles over it.
I find it interesting. Did he scale a fence to get there in the first place?
We don't see that.
So is he lost? Because I'm pretty sure like if that happened to me, the direction I'd be heading would be towards my home.
Hector stumbles through this movie, and then out of nowhere, he seems to know everything. He becomes omniscient at about like 45 minutes in.
It is the movie's biggest flaw is the inconsistency of this character.
Yeah.
Because he comes off as a stupid creep at the beginning, and then he kind of guides a lot of the plans and everything that's going on. It's rather intelligent. But it's not like anything happened in the movie for him to learn, you know, like there's no reason to believe he's going to have this character arc.
Well, yeah, he's incredibly intelligent part way through the movie. It is a flaw in the writing, I will say. Because honestly, I would rather follow bumbling Hector trying to figure things out as opposed to, spoiler, other Hector figuring everything out immediately, like instantaneously and plotting out the rest of the movie out of nowhere.
Yep. And there's what I feel like some fairly easy ways to get around it. You pretty much just got to get the ball rolling for this to make sense. And it could be as simple as he is a womanizer and he sees a naked woman in the forest.
Yeah.
Okay. I've all the reason to believe that he would be following up on that. That's all I need to know.
So he finds his way to a nearby building, a silo of sorts, shatters a window, climbs inside, and the place is abandoned, but there's music blaring?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's fine. Normal.
I love how once he gets inside, he just kind of stops running or hiding. He just kind of walks around like he owns the place. So I'm pretty sure you broke in there to escape this assailant. He could easily look in the window and be like, oh, he's right there.
Yeah. And like, there's no shortage of windows here.
Yeah.
Pretty much the side of the building is glass, but apparently that doesn't matter anymore.
No, no.
We get that drawing and the calendar, the drawing we'll return to, but I think this is the point of the movie where I realize I have to really start paying attention to every little detail that happens because it will be referenced later.
Yeah, see, not me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is the opposite for me. I'm like, oh, if I miss something, they're going to explain it to me later.
Sometimes. Further exploration leads him to a lab of some sort where he finds bandages to fix up his arm. Another detail where I'm like, oh, okay, that's the bandage from the other guy's head. Has to be, right?
No, because these aren't pink, Ben.
Oh, that's right.
See? Duh. It's...
I really do have a problem with this movie. And like, yes, I really do enjoy it. I find certain parts of it are way too complex and others are hit you over the head obvious. So I don't know if it's a good movie or a good idea that turned into a mediocre movie.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll know by the end of this discussion.
Stay tuned. I'm really curious to know what you think. So yeah, he discovers another room, looks straight out of a sci-fi film, finds a walkie-talkie and has a conversation with a mystery man. It says, stay calm. I'm in another building. I'll be right there. Is the man after you wearing pink bandages? Stay where you are. Best intrigue of the movie right there.
Yeah.
Hector barricades himself in the room while the man on the other walkie tells him what the pink bandaged man is doing. He's closing in on Hector's location. And honestly, shit's getting pretty intense here. Like, this is great filmmaking, in my opinion.
Oh, I'm on the edge of my seat just waiting to find out what's going to happen next.
Yeah, like, we don't know exactly what's going on, but we have both been hooked to the point where, like, just tell us more. This movie, to me right now at this point, is a drug.
It's a real question of like, how many pieces are they going to give me that don't fit together before they start putting them together?
Well, it's also a matter of like, how many pieces are there to this puzzle? Because as we get into the film, the puzzle's getting larger and larger and larger. It almost makes me feel overwhelmed, but they do a decent job, or Nacho does a decent job of keeping it concise enough to that, like, that short runtime, where we know it's not going to get too crazy because they will wrap things up properly.
Yeah, see, I never worry this early into a movie, especially one that has time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've watched too many movies like this where nothing seems to make sense. And somehow they give you that just one piece that ties it all together at the end. So in my mind, I'm just like, I need to wait until the end to determine how I feel about this, because it's going to come down to if they actually put it all together or not.
Do you think this movie would have been better if it wasn't all explained?
No. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. It was a misdirect. Time travel movies can be overly complex, and when they're done, you're like, I don't know. I don't think I even care, because there's no way I'm going to figure it out. Vigilando does a really good job at tying up all loose ends here. And that's why I recommend it, because it's a time travel movie done well. But
I'm just waiting for the killer robot from the future to show up. They have one of those, right?
Of course they do. It's a T-800.
Okay, I was worried there for a minute.
So the sun is set, and Hector follows a lit path to another building where the walkie-talkie man convinces him to get into a machine to hide.
Okay, a couple of thoughts here.
Oh, I have a few as well. Please, go ahead.
So my first thought is, this illuminated path just seems like a bad idea. And I know that they do say it eventually, like, oh, he'll see the light, because, yes, you've illuminated the path. The whole, like, get in, he'll never see you in here. And I can't get in with you. I have to turn it from the outside. I'm like, I'm not buying any of this if I'm that guy. But
no,
Hector seems to be like an idiot. So we gotta assume he's just gonna be dumb and listen.
Yeah, the big flaw of the movie for sure is Hector's intelligence. But when, if somebody is chasing me and I encounter a mystery man in a science lab who's like, get into this giant vat and I'll hide you, I'd be like, how about no? Do you have like a baseball bat or something? There's two of us now and one of him. He has scissors. Like, we can take him.
Yeah, no, not gonna happen, dude.
No, he just. Like, the bandaged man, he's outside and sees Hector, so he just jumps in the machine. And then it opens up again, and he crawls out vomiting everywhere, exits the building, but now it's daylight. That's a great reveal. Walkie-talkie man asks if they've met each other before. And when that happened, my first thought is, oh, Jesus Christ, I fucked up with this pick.
Yeah, you did.
I know I did. I'm like, oh, here we go. This is going to be a very convoluted discussion, or we're just going to breeze through it and it'll be our shortest episode ever. FYI, we're over a third of the way through my notes.
This is the epitome of a movie that is not to be discussed.
I know. Oh, God, I'm so sorry, listeners.
Not for reviews.
No, not at all.
At least not long form reviews, you know, like if I saw like a review in the paper or something like that for this, then fine, but not long form where we actually go into details about it.
Yeah. Well, my note does say, Jesus Christ, I fucked up with this pick. And then my next one says, now outside, Hector uses his binoculars and sees himself and Clara from a few hours earlier. I'm like, oh, God. what do you do at this point, really?
All week I was like, how's Ben gonna make notes for this and not go insane?
Oh, I've snapped a few times. The walkie-talkie man, now we'll call him the scientist, tells Hector he went back in time. But what I love here is that it's presented that the scientist doesn't know how Hector got into the machine in the first place, but he does. We just don't know it now. Or does he? And my next note just says, and yes, now we are in full coherence mode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you proud of yourself for this pick?
I hate myself. I hate myself so much. So we're what, like an hour before now?
I can't remember the exact, but I think they said like, yeah, maybe
an hour or two.
Yeah. Not even like a half a day, like just a couple of hours.
Yeah. The sun sets very quickly in Spain somehow, because if it was an hour or two before, we went from full daylight to nighttime in no time.
Well, they were talking at the beginning when they were doing the whole thing with the table about, like, I think the loser makes dinner or something like that.
Okay.
So we can assume this is just, like, just before the sun would set. And, yeah, you know, a sun could set in an hour or two. That's believable.
I don't buy that.
If it's 2 hours, come on.
2 hours is a little bit more believable. I think it's one here.
You got all this time travel stuff. You're hung up on the lighting. You're not in for a good time, man.
I did not have a good time. Why does the scientist have commercial vending machines in his building? That is what I wrote. It is revealed that he is working there on the weekend when he shouldn't be. But Hector doesn't seem to know that this compound even exists.
It's not that far from his house, and well, the way they talk about it is that there's a full staff here during the week.
Exactly. So if you're buying a house, do you not look at like what buildings are nearby? Because this is technically his closest neighbor, and he has no idea what the space is.
No, well, I mean, we've determined that Hector 1 is an idiot.
But this is Hector 2.
No, it's Hector One. We're following the original character from the beginning of the story.
Well, no, he becomes Hector Two because now he's gone back in time and there's the previous Hector who is Hector One. And no. that is a problem that I have with this movie. It's that every time travel becomes an issue, we follow the same Hector throughout the movie. And he comes from Hector to Hector Two to Hector Three. But he doesn't change. There's just previous versions of him popping up in his world, in his timeline.
Okay, well, yeah, you're getting into the Hector 1, 2, and 3 as they're labeled in the movie. I'm thinking this is just the one we've been following from the start.
Yes, but this is a weird take where our character technically changes as the movie progresses, even though he's still the same person. And that's actually kind of what I dig about this. So the scientist tells Hector he can't go home because he's already there. And what I find very confusing about this scientist character is he just pelts Hector with questions. And when Hector tries to answer, he shuts him down saying it's better not to know. Which really fucks over the audience because we're like, yeah, please explain this to us now. But a perfect example, he has no idea how Hector got in the machine in the first place. But as you go through the movie, you're like, oh, actually, he does. But they don't even really reference that.
But that's just it. He's not trying to get the answers from Hector. He's trying to guide Hector without just flat out saying it. So as a movie viewer at the time of like the runtime, it doesn't make sense. And this guy's actually a bit of a jerk for the way he's. Almost manipulating Hector. But from somebody who's finished the movie, you're like, oh, he was trying to guide him to a predetermined outcome.
Yeah, which is great. I do like the fact that this is a short film. Well, it's not a short film. It's a shorter runtime for a feature film. But I highly recommend that you watch it and then immediately rewatch it after. So the scientist draws that diagram that we saw earlier, like the weird like S almost with like the two X's on it.
Mm-hmm.
And explains how they'll set things up in an hour to end this result. That drawing already exists. I find that to be a bit problematic, but also like why? The scientist says he'll bring everything back to normal and that he shouldn't still be at the center, but decided to stay late. So the center, like I said, explains the vending machines. How does Hector not know this building exists? I can't tell you. And then we go to the phone call that we got earlier in the film because he's calling his own house. Do you want to take it from here?
No, you're doing a great job, man.
I'm struggling so hard. He's immediately scolded by the scientist, and it does make sense. Hector, he's such an idiot. He doesn't seem to understand that Hector 1 is still himself just an hour earlier. It's almost like he thinks he's an imposter.
He hasn't caught on yet at this time.
Is he an idiot?
He is an idiot.
I agree. And I think he's an idiot with purpose because it does help the plot. But then they flip that later and you're like, well, now it's plot convenience. Like I remember loving this movie, but I am starting to see cracks in the foundation of it. So Hector steals the scientist's car, which is the shittiest car I've seen since the Reliant Robin.
Oh, man, the Reliant Robin.
I honestly, like, watching it, I'm like, can you imagine if you just rolled it like Clarkson did? And just pushes it back up, right? Anyway, he sees the woman on her bicycle, and then a van rams him into the woods, resulting in a very convincing looking head wound. But now we see him use the gauze from the stab wound to his arm to wrap the head wound.
Does he not have concern for his arm either? Yeah, it couldn't have healed already.
What the fuck is dripping all over the car mat? It's like foamy pus or something.
That's blood.
That is not blood. It's a
weird, it was done well.
It's a weird pink foam. That confuses me every time I watch this movie.
What I actually thought was that it was like part of the bandages.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had become so sopped that they, like, part of it was just kind of falling off, you know?
Okay. I disagree, but I have no better explanation, so I'll accept that.
Oh, I wasn't looking for an explanation at the time. That was just kind of what I... Yeah, that might be what it is, and I just wrote it off. I didn't really put too much thought into it.
Can you clarify this part for me?
Probably not, but sure.
He... Hector, he starts panicking because the scientist told him that if things didn't play out as they did previously, then he would cease to exist.
Okay.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I'm asking you why. I don't understand that statement.
Well, this is part of the time travel conundrum. If the events don't play out, which would cause him to actually get into that machine to go back in time, then he wouldn't be in that spot in, like, where he is right now, like, currently wrapping his head.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't end up going through. But then if he didn't go through, it wouldn't have... It's like, this is the cyclic problem with time travel. You have to be very brave to even try and write a story like this.
Yeah. I will have to agree with that. I'm just not sure why he couldn't vary off and, like, do his own thing at this point and keep existing.
But because he has never gone into the machine to go back there.
Oh, that's right. We haven't got to that point yet.
Right. But that's what I said. Like, if the events don't play out, then the past version of himself, or whatever you want to call the one that we saw at the beginning of the movie, wouldn't get into the pod. So the one that is currently there wrapping his head wouldn't be there.
Yes, correct. So with the blood-soaked gauze now around his face, the girl runs up to the car to check on him. And she wants to warn the authorities, but Hector stops her. She takes care of the gauze, I guess, but puts a small strip in her bag.
See, now this is the first instance of inconsistency with Hector's intelligence, because he's now immediately grasped onto the idea that he has to replicate the events as they were in order to get himself into that machine.
Yes.
But he hasn't been smart about anything prior to this.
No. His intelligence just skyrockets. Like, he grabs her scissors, forces her to strip, so Hector 1 can view her through the binoculars and keep the loop going. So, obviously, this young woman wants none of this to happen. And I guess this makes our protagonist the antagonist now?
Well, and that's just it, right? The guy with the red bandages, because I'm not going to get into this Hector 1, Hector 2 garbage, is the antagonist.
Yes. Which I find very interesting, because if we're following just this one Hector, he goes from protagonist to antagonist to a weird mix of both by the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So she attacks him and they scuffle, tumble down an incline. She hits her head, killing her. Hector 2 strips her down and places her in the position that Hector 1 will eventually find her in. And this is where Hector 1 gets stabbed in the arm.
No, because he has to do it.
I like all of this. But they don't really focus on him getting stabbed in the arm. You just see the action kind of happen slightly off screen.
Well, because I don't think this movie necessarily had the budget or the technology to put two of them on the screen.
Yeah.
So they were going to use tricks like, oh, here's a similar built guy or a similar back of the head, and we're just going to have like a shoulder on camera or something. It's just tricks to, and this is probably where that fifth cast member that just said occasional Hector comes in, right?
Yeah. My next note just says, good Christ, this is going to get weird.
Yeah. But from a movie making standpoint, like with those limitations, they are doing a good job.
Oh, yeah.
Because we see the same events a number of times. And obviously they're doing it because of like technological limitations or budgeting limitations or whatever you want to call it. But doing it from different angles each time, which is necessary to hide like the actors and things like that, gives it such a cinematic feel because you are seeing it from different angles.
Keep in mind, this is Vigilondo's first feature film.
This is an ambitious first project. Like, I don't know too many people who are that comfortable even just doing a time-traveling tale, because that always becomes difficult. And to do it on the first film is crazy.
I know. I think this one is problematic, but it's still very entertaining. What are your thoughts on Hector 2 trying to do that dramatic turnaround, mocking the use of the binoculars where Hector 1 sees the bandaged man?
I don't know.
He tries it so many times, and eventually it works. I think this is the only other instance of comedy in this film.
Yeah, there's not a lot of it.
I don't think we need any of it, though.
No, not at all. I mean, you can have a little, but it needs to be very subtle and not force-fed, because this movie is way too short and way too serious to linger on it.
Especially for the few instances that we get. What I do love, though, are the misdirects that they give us in this. Because Hector 2 hears a woman scream in the distance. It's played up for us to believe that it's his wife, I think.
Yeah, that's how it's played up to be, yeah.
Yeah, because he checks on the young woman in the woods and she's still there. He runs back to his house, somehow just kicks down the fence and enters.
You got no time for you, fence.
Right? I mean, even something like that, you could hop over a lot faster than you're just going to stand there and boot the shit out of it. But he rips the phone line from the wall when the phone rings, goes upstairs and eats that aforementioned table to the face. And
That's my type of comedy.
Dude, they do it so well. They even, like, for me watching, I'm thinking it's his wife. Thinking there's, like, a home invasion happening, and she just hits this intruder in the face. Sees an open window and assumes that his wife escaped the house that way, but that is not the case. Then we get what seems to be him chasing her back out onto the roof and accidentally killing her, which is a gruesome death, too. That neck is twisted. But none of this is the case. This is so, so difficult to write.
Knowing the end of the movie and seeing this scene particularly, you're like, he should know.
Yeah, he really should know.
Because, spoiler, that's not his wife. But, okay, and yes, like you said, that neck is twisted, but it's twisted in a way that the face is looking right at him. It's like, you don't exactly know that that's not your wife?
Exactly. And I'm confused as to how she is even there. And we'll get to that, and I need you to explain it to me. So Hector 2 hears Hector 1 and the scientist over the walkie, and then Hector 2 orchestrates the encounter at the silo. I actually really enjoy the conversation between the scientist and Hector 2 after Hector 1 gets in the machine, where the scientist is like, I need to examine you. But no, Hector wants to get back in the machine. So the scientist just throws something into the woods. I'm like, this is good. I think I'm picking up on what's happening here. Hector realizes a part of the machine is missing. And fucking here we go, man. I have never seen anyone take a crowbar to the collarbone before.
You have to imagine that hurts a lot.
Oh my god. Hector 2 removes the bandages and pieces together that the scientist threw away the battery because another Hector warned him. And now we have fucking Hector 3. My next note says, oh, fuck, now we're really getting into it.
Oh, man, just listening to you try and explain it. Even I've seen the movie multiple times, and even I'm like, oh, Hector 1, Hector 2, what is Ben saying here? What's, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, apparently something terrible is going to happen. So the scientist threw away the battery to stop the creation of Hector 3. But Hector 3 already exists, and Hector 2 is about to destroy the walkie but finds the battery. Sirens erupt in the distance as it starts pouring rain. Sandra, we are so close to the end of my notes.
Yeah, it's not a long movie. But
the scientist preps the time machine and Hector 2 enters and is incredibly nonchalant when he gets out. keep in mind the first time he's vomiting this liquid everywhere, he's choking, he's dragging himself off the side, falling on the floor and like slipping all over the place. Here he just stands up, coughs, spits out some of the liquid, and slaps the side of his head to get it out of his ears.
Well, because he knows what to expect this time. Remember, the first time, the door closed on him, and he even tried to get out. Like, he reaches over the side before he realizes, oh, no, this is going to close on me, and gets back in.
Yeah.
This time around, he's just submitting himself to it.
Ready for it.
Yep.
I'm so confused at this point that my notes don't even make sense.
Oh.
Because I just have written, so Hector 3 is the one who went back to the house first and spooked his wife? It's not his wife. The scientist gives Hector 3 a van, and this is where he sees that young woman on her bike, where he wrecks the van in the woods after running Hector 2 off the road. And honestly, Hector has taken such a beating in this movie.
Yeah.
He doesn't even look human by the end of it. So he sees the girl in the woods and threatens the scientist on the walkie. Fuck, help me out here. So the scream we heard wasn't actually his wife. It was the young woman in the woods.
Well, his wife does scream at one point when she's home from, I guess,
going back to the store. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Hector 2, like, catches her and then tells her to, like, go hide in the, like, the, I don't know if it's a shed or a basement
or something.
Yeah, something like that. So she was screaming because she bumps into Hector, not expecting it, and he is not looking so good.
Yeah, this is Hector 3. But my question is, we get the young girl from the woods going back to the house, but isn't she supposed to be dead in the woods already?
I didn't think she was dead. I thought when she hit her head, she just got, like, knocked out.
But when does she wake up and then get dressed again and not freak out about seeing Hector?
Don't think they go over those details.
Yeah, that's a chunk of the story that is missing, or I'm misinterpreting everything and doesn't make sense. But yeah, because she's dead, supposedly dead, during the day. But at night, she's now alive.
Yeah, see, I thought she was just knocked out, but
we never see them reconvene, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, I have it written right here. Clara enters and sees Hector 3 and is horrified by his state.
Well, yeah, he's looking pretty bad right now.
But she also tells him that somebody else is in the house.
Yeah, and this is Hector 2 that's in the house right now.
Is it Hector 2 or Hector 3?
Hector 3 is with Clara. Hector 2 is the one that's making the noise in the house from his earlier visit.
Exactly. So Hector 3 tries to hide his wife, Clara, in the closet. And this is where we get that setup of the rooftop scenarios with Hector 2, like you were just saying. Correct. And then we find that it was actually Hector 3 who threw the table, not Clara, because we didn't actually see her. It was the scream and then the table throw. Hector 3 cuts the young woman's hair, cuts off her ponytail, like cuts it shorter, tells her to hide in the attic, which also makes her look like Clara. And this is why Hector 2 thinks he sees his wife fleeing.
Because he never looks at his wife to know her face.
Apparently.
See, the issue is that they twisted her neck when she fell like that.
Yes.
If we just saw the back of her head with her haircut and her clothes on, right? Because Hector also gives her some of the clothes to change into, right? Then it's maybe a little bit more believable, because who else would be in the house that has those clothes and that hair?
Exactly.
Right? But the fact that they twisted the face around, it's like, well, that, no?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess you're trying to convey that she's dead, but like, we'd get it.
Yeah, if she just wasn't moving.
Yeah, or, you know, put a pool of blood under her.
Yeah.
Like something. But it's cool, whatever.
So, yeah, this is where the girl dies. Hector 2 thinks it's his wife. All while Hector 3 and Clara are sitting in lawn chairs in the yard. So Hector 2 drives off to the silo where he will inevitably become Hector 3. And we roll credits.
Yep.
End of the movie.
Yep.
I really fucked this one up.
Why is that?
This is the shortest episode we've ever had.
Yeah, well,
it's
so far.
So far.
We're not done talking.
It is a very entertaining movie that you should talk about while you're watching it with a friend, not trying to review it.
Oh, hey, man, I don't pick the movies, dude.
I know. I messed up. I've said that numerous times here.
Okay, so what's your interpretation of the ending here, then?
I feel like it's a dead ending.
How so?
I think the story will continue.
No.
You don't?
The Hectors are now going to converge in this one sitting in the chair.
How?
Because all three instances of it are going to ultimately lead to this cyclical routine that ends with him in the chair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're right.
None of the previous versions will be there because they are going through this loop of making their way to being Hector 3. And
yeah,
he's smart enough at this point to know that.
Yes.
The only issue is that he's got to worry about the dead girl in the
yard.
That
was a concern. Yeah. Like, you're going to have to hide that body.
She's probably the, like, most innocent victim in this movie.
Yeah. She was just a girl riding a bicycle that tried to stop and help somebody who was in a car accident.
Yep. And she's dead.
Yeah.
But the ending is perfect. In regards to, like,
you're correct,
tying up the time-traveling aspect of it. There are definitely other flaws in it. But for tying it up, you're like, okay, yes. Hector 2 will become Hector 3. Hector 1 will become Hector 2. Like, they'll all end up in this chair.
Yeah.
We know that. And even when he's, like, Clara is talking, when they're sitting in the chair, she mentions, like, something about the rain that's going to come. That's kind of mentioned all throughout the movie. And she says, like, it's going to come soon. And he's like, no, we have a couple hours or something like that. Because he's lived this. And then it ends. And you're like, okay. Outside of, like, the body, you know, that's seemingly not that far away from where your lawn chairs are, mm-hmm. You've tied up the actual time traveling portion of it, which in my opinion is probably the most difficult part for a writer that's tackling a time traveling movie.
Yeah. The movie is short. It's acted very well. I think it benefits from the fact that there are so few characters. Apparently, they were going to try and do an American remake of it. I don't think that would fly. I don't think it would work as well.
It might. I think the benefit of a remake would be hindsight, in that you could look at this product and address the issues with the plot.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it always comes down to who does it. So if in the right hands it is done, then they could actually improve this by learning from it.
Yeah, apparently they wanted David Cronenberg to direct the remake. The master of body horror, I think, would be taking it in a very different direction. I think that's probably the best way you could do it. But I'm more so curious to think, or to know what you think of the reviews, the ratings this movie had. But I want to talk. Okay, yeah, we'll go budget first, like we normally do.
Okay. This can't be that high. Like, 400,000.
2.6 million.
Jesus.
I know. I don't know where that money went.
Yeah. I guess it's hard to say. I don't know how popular these actors are in Spain.
That's a very good point. I don't know.
Maybe they do warrant a big salary. I don't know.
I imagine not, if it's the first feature film by Nacho Vigalondo, who is also the writer.
Well, and that's what I assumed, that, you know, it is for lesser known actors who are doing, you know, a person's first movie. Yeah. There's very little in regards to different scenery. Like, where would the money go? Like, you know, you buy a couple cars that you're going to destroy, and then, like, I guess I don't know, build that dome that he sits in for the actual machine, but the rest could have just been on location areas nearby. Like,
it's all very rural. A lot of it's forest. Like,
yeah, so I am a little surprised that it is that high.
How much do you think it made?
It could. Okay, but then again, I don't know what it's... So this is the problem with a foreign film. Like, maybe it did great for them domestically, and no. It just didn't... Okay, 400,000.
564,500.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. There was no way this movie was going to make back its budget.
Yeah, I'm just surprised by the budget. Honestly,
that's
quite high.
The reception, though, I think you and I would agree with the reviews it got. For IMDb, out of 10, where do you think it's sitting?
8.3.
7.1.
Okay.
Number of positive reviews from critics at Rotten Tomatoes. So on the tomato meter, what is it sitting at?
Yeah, I'm sticking with the same one. 83.
90.
Okay.
Audience score?
87.
79.
Okay, so not my best day for guessing, but honestly, the movie overall has very good reviews from all sources.
Yeah, I'm fine with all of those. I agree with them fully. We can't really do awards. Like,
we already said that.
Least favorite character or favorite character. How do you feel the characters were used? Because I think everybody was used appropriately. Like, everybody definitely fit a role that was necessitated.
Well, yeah, there was only four people, and they had to fill every role that the movie required. So
it's so concise, and I think very well cast. I have no problem with any actor in this movie. The fact that Nacho Vigalondo, the writer-director, also plays the scientist is mind-numbing for me.
Yeah, he's quite good in this.
Yeah, he really is.
Keeping in mind, it's really hard for me to tell, because, again, I'm watching it with subtitles, and I don't know Spanish, so maybe when, like, some of these scenes are happening, the tone of their delivery is maybe not so accurate, but I don't get that impression when I'm reading the subtitles, and I don't know what they're saying, but it feels like it's all right.
I love that we watched, and for the most part enjoyed, a very intelligent, intricate movie about time travel that has four characters and only two of them have names. That is good storytelling. Because we have Hector, Clara, the scientist, and the woman in the forest. That's how they're credited.
And don't forget occasional Hector.
And occasional Hector, fine. Body double Hector.
Favorite character right there.
Yeah. What do you think? Like, what do you think about this movie, man? It's a weird one. It's very difficult to talk about.
Yeah, it's absolutely brutal to talk about. I don't like you for this at all.
It's such a fun movie to watch, though. Are you a fan of time crimes?
Yes, I am very much a fan of time crimes. I've seen it a number of times now, and I enjoyed it every time.
Yeah, I praise this movie. Anytime it comes up, I tell people they have to see it.
Is it a perfect movie? Absolutely not. There's a lot of issues with it. There's a lot of instances of poor writing. I think the biggest one being obviously the inconsistency with Hector's intelligence. But I think that what saves this movie is that they did such a good job, at least to me. I don't know how you felt about it, because you didn't seem to be as behind this idea as me, but they tie up the time traveling aspect perfectly, which I think is such a difficult thing to do that it makes it so much easier to overlook something that ultimately is inconsequential with, like, say, Hector's intelligence.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Nacho Vigalondo, his parallel monsters or whatever that was called, I forget now, from VHS Viral, is equally scientific, but dealing with different dimensions. He's so smart. So smart. I don't know if he's the best writer, but he came up with a very good story and did an amazing job at directing it. Normally, we have a lot of issues with time travel or interdimensional stories, alternate realities, coherence, first and foremost. I've recommended that movie to three different people today.
Coherence is quite good.
It was quite good. I will still recommend this movie. Yes, it's not perfect, but it's very thought-provoking, and it's well-directed and very well-acted. Yes, there are plot holes in the script, so you can't really say it's incredibly well-written. But for an independent, lower-budget, I could say, film about time travel with almost no cast, it's pretty fucking impressive. I watched this movie not frequently. I've seen it maybe, well, we first covered it shortly after it came out. So I might have seen it 8 times, and it's enjoyable every time. It's never boring. The runtime is short enough that it just flies by. It's what, like, you just over 90 minutes?
I believe on Tubi, it is 128 with credits.
Okay. Well, it's, what do you say? Like, there's so much going on. You're thinking all the time. That when you think you have everything figured out, the movie's already over. 100% on my end, a recommendation. Watch it with friends. Watch it alone. It's too good not to experience. I love this movie. What's your take?
I agree with you. I think that this is a fantastic movie. I think that anybody who is interested should watch it. I do think that it might hurt some people if they can't find a dub, because not everybody wants to watch a movie with subtitles, and that's fine. But it's definitely, like, if you're interested in the subject matter at all, you need to watch this movie. It's so good. I've seen it 3 times. I absolutely do love it, and I highly recommend it.
I'm glad you like this one, man.
I don't want to review it, but I will watch it.
I didn't realize until now that I didn't want to review it either. It's just, it's a movie that people sleep on. Like, a lot of people have missed this, and I get it. Like, how many people in North America are watching Spanish science fiction films?
No, I never would have if it wasn't for you guys.
Exactly. It's such a good film. Such a good film. And it made me follow Vigalondo's career. This guy is really, really fucking weird. But he's incredibly intelligent, and I can't wait to see what he does next. Yeah, this is one film we've covered where I really want to hear from anybody listening what they thought of it. Please track it down, watch it. It's short. Let us know what you think, because there's so many conversations that can come from this, and I'd love to talk with you about this movie.
Okay. So that's our thoughts on Time Crimes. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, please do, as Ben said, reach out to us. You can hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter at BSBargainBin, Facebook.com/BSBargainBin, BSBargainBin.com, and YouTube.com/@BSBargainBin. Ben.
Yo.
We love this movie.
Yes.
We didn't love talking about it.
No.
You're not making that mistake again next week, are you?
Fuck no.
Okay. What are we watching next week?
You know what we're watching next week. Next week, we're talking 1996's From Dusk Till Dawn.
Everybody be cool. You be cool. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Low profile. You understand the meaning of the words? Low profile?
Sure. Two of America's most dangerous criminals have taken hostages.
What is this?
It's called a punch.
I'm going to ask you one question, and all I want is a yes or no answer. Do you want to live through this?
Yes.
Okay, Ramblers,
Let's get rambling.
One night is all that stands between them and freedom.
This is my kind of place.
But it's going to be one hell of a night.
We might be in trouble. There are a bunch of fucking vampires out there trying to get in here and suck our fucking blood.
Now, their only chance is to fight back.
Oh, yeah!
Keitel, George Clooney, Quentin Tarantino, Juliette Lewis.
Welcome to slavery.
No thanks. I already had a wife.
From dusk till dawn.
Until next week, have a good one.
All the best.